Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Bet of Sefer Tzefanya, Chapter 2 of the Book of Tzefanya in the OU's Continuing Nach Yomi Project. And this is a chapter that sort of splits into two. The first four psukim, first three psukim, are really addressed to Jews who are part of the society of Yerushalayim and Yehuda, that Tzefanya was addressing the previous chapter with the warnings of the coming troubles and destruction. And then in the fourth pasuk, and we'll go into the rest of this parak will be sort of a tirade or an attack or a prediction of troubles for all those who have given the Jews problems, and we'll see that in a moment. But the first few psukim are directly addressed to some segment of our population. So the pasuk starts with Hitkoshishu v'koshu hagoy lo nichsaf. So Hitkoshishu means to gather together. So that's the way Rashi says it. And Rashi says that it means, Hishvum asechem da'at kunchem. Try to, Hikoshu v'koshu, ha'goyen lo nechsav, the nation that has not been willing to be embarrassed and doesn't have the shame over what they've done wrong. So Tzefanya's telling them, no, try to figure it out, gather together, think about it. And the Radak also says Hikoshu means to look into things. Inyan chipusa dvarim v'likitatam. The gathering together isn't the important piece of it. It's that to gather them together, you have to look into them. So you should be looking at all of the things you've done wrong and get rid of them. And so this is the nation that doesn't have the shame, it doesn't do this. So this is the last call. It's saying, this is, if you want to avert some of the tragedies, if anything, Radak is going to say, it says later on in the chapter, that exile is not avertible anymore, because that has already been fully decreed in the time of Menashe. That will no longer be able to be avoided, but much of the rest can still be avoided. So that's what the parak is calling for. That's what the pasuk is calling for. Rashi and Radak both note that the Gemara in several places also uses this for the general principle, one of them being in Bava Batra, for the general principle, kshot atzmecha v'acharkach kshot acherim, that the ideal is that before somebody declares a judgment on somebody else, and there are times when judges, we live in a society perhaps where we think that declaring judgment on somebody else is always a problem, but Chazal assumed that declaring judgment on other people was sometimes necessary. So the discussion or the claim here is that before you declare a judgment on somebody else, you just have to make sure that you don't have that same issue in your own situation. So the example of Gemara Batra is somebody comes to him for a judgment about a certain case and he knows he's wrong. One of the people is wrong. And before he's willing to, and he sends them away, tells them to come back tomorrow. Before they come back, he has a similar issue, not the same issue, and his issue, there was a way for him to have said to be on the right side of his particular issue, but he nonetheless went ahead and got rid of even the appearance of impropriety before he was willing to render judgment. So that's the principle of kshot atzmecha v'acharkach kshot acharim. They should be avoiding the appearance of seeming to have a flaw in yourself before you start trying to remove it from other people. So that can be challenging if you have a flaw, but you know that it's a flaw that others need to get rid of as well, how you handle that. But that is part of what we get from this pasuk, koshu v'koshu. So look at yourselves and see who you are. Pasuk bed, b'terem ledet chok kemot avar yom, b'terem lo yavo alechem charonav Hashem, b'terem lo yavo alechem yom af Hashem. Before the decree comes, like and kemot avar yom, the day is passing, meaning the time is going quickly. You don't have so much time to change. B'terem, before it comes to you, before, and then b'terem again, there are three b'terems in the pasuk, before it comes upon you, the anger of Hashem, before it comes upon you, the day of Af Hashem, of the anger of Hashem. So this is all a call to say, be aware of what's coming, and do what you can to avoid it. So what is it that you can do, what you can't do to avoid it? So you saw part of it in the first pasuk of Yikosh Shivakosh, but also here in pasuk Gilam, Bakshuat Hashem Kol Anvei Aretz, Seek Hashem, all of the modest ones of the earth, Asher Mishpato Fa'alu, who have done like what Hashem wants, His justice, Bakshu Tzedek, Seek Search for Righteousness, Bakshu Anava, maybe you'll be able to save yourselves on the day of Af Hashem. So the Radak says all this is being said keneged anvei aretz, ki af ha pishach to rov Yisrael, even though in these times most of the Jews have committed sins, there were many. This is a thing we've seen, those who have been studying with me, at least in my brakim, I've seen it several times in the Radak before. The Radak is the assumption, because there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that refers to 7,000 people. So the Radak has an assumption that there were a sizable number, although a minority, but a sizable number of people who did not do the wrong thing, and who Hashem sees as good, right? So, so this is a call to them to, hold on, I apologize, I was just checking myself, the 7,000 is referred to in Malachim, that there were these 7,000 people who are still righteous, who are still good. So that says, even so, even though they're still good, even though they're admittedly good, nonetheless they can get killed, and they might get killed with, they might get killed along with the rest of the Jewish people, even though they were Avdei HaKel. So that's obviously, comes back to the question of how could it be they'll be killed, so that's part of the whole recognition that individual justice and individual calling to account doesn't happen fully on the individual level except in Olam Haba. But if there is a strong element in which we are today in these, in this world, implicated by the society in which we live. So the call is going out to them to strive as much as you can to do righteousness and to get, so the Radak thinks it's then to get others to rejoin the ways of righteousness. And maybe by virtue of doing that, you won't die by the sword and you'll go into Galut. And so, and the Radak says, and there's no even in, there's no even indication that you might avoid Galut because that was firmly decided already. So this pasuk, I think, has strong ramifications for lots of people. Meaning, let's say somebody finds themselves in a society which they think is corrupted in some significant ways, so they might try to leave, right? There's no necessity in the time of Tefanya, if you were in Yerushalayim, you were stuck in Yerushalayim, you weren't going to go very, very far, but you, maybe you could leave. But let's say you're, for some reason you're stuck somewhere, so then you have to continually try to, it would seem like, you have to continually try to improve others in order not only that you could help them, but even also as a way to avoid having punishment for yourself, because the, not only being self, being personally righteous might not be good enough to avoid being implicated and caught up in the punishment that will arrive for the group as a whole. Pasuk Dalet. Now we switch gears though. Ki aza azuva tiye v'ashkalon lishmama ashdod b'tzaharayim yigarashua v'ekron te'aker. Because now the contrasting examples are what's going to happen to nations around them. So these are all cities of Plishtim, these are all cities of the Philistines, and they're all going to be destroyed. So Azah will be deserted, Ashkelon will be desolate, Ashdod will in the middle of the day be kicked out of its land, and Ekron will be uprooted. But the Radak notes on each one of these that these are plays on words. Azah Azuva is simple, and Ekron Teaker is fairly simple. I think Ashkelon Lishmama is also off of the shin, but Ashdod bat Zaharayim Yigarashua, the Radak interestingly claims that Ashdod bat Zaharayim Yigarashua is a reference to the pasuk in Tehillim that says Miketev Yishud bat Zaharayim, so which is referring to that a plague will make them desolate in at noon. But Yashud and Ashdod are similar to each other, and that's what it's building off of. So that's an interesting idea about puns and plays on words, that here you're trying for a play on word, and you use that Sefanya would feel comfortable using Tehillim as a background for his play on words, which suggests that these psukim were meant to be rolling around in the heads of his listeners, of those who hear him. The question of why you want to do a play on words is a question of its own. This is not the only place, but it seems like the Radak at least would assume that uses of language like this and plays on words and making the language flow smoother is a valuable piece of getting a point across. That's a topic of its own that we won't get into right now. So that's Plishtim. And then we go on with them. Hoy, Pasuk, hey, hoy, Yoshvei, Chevel Hayam, Goy Kiretim, Devar Hashem Aleichem, Kinan, Eretz Plishtim, Vavadich Me'en Yoshev. So it's a terrible for you, this nation. So Goy Kiretim, Rashi quotes Targum Yonatan that it's Amad de Mechayvin Lishtetza, that's a nation that is obligated or liable to be destroyed. And this is the Plishtim, the merchants on Plishtim, because they sit on Chevel Hayam, on the strip of land near the sea. And then Rashi says, but even though they're reading it that way, also Kretim is the name of a place. And so Goy Kretim would be the people of Kret, of Kretim. And so to, and when David is in Tziklag, he says, we went to the Kreti to be poshet, to rampage and to pillage and to plunder. So that's what a Goy Kretim would seem to be. It seemed to be either a reference to Plishtim as a whole or to this particular thing, and it's saying that their land, and they will be destroyed from their land, and their land will be desolate. Pasuk Vav, Vayta Chevel Hayam, Nevot Kerot Ro'im Megidrot Zon, and then it'll become a place for shepherds and flocks, and the point being that there's nobody living there, so you can just graze there freely. It's a sign of the level of destruction that will come there. Vaya Chevel Sherit Beyuda, Alehem Yerun, Bevate Ashkelon, Ba'erev Yerbatzun, Kivkedem Hashem Lokehem, Vishav Vishivitam. that this strip will become for the remnant of the Jewish people a place to shepherd, to graze their sheep in the houses of Ashkelon, and at night they'll lie down there, meaning they'll have the room and the freedom to do so when Hashem brings them back. So the Radak thinks it's either when they were coming back from Bavel, it's a prediction even just for that time, which is not so far in the future, that they'll do it and they'll graze there. But he says it's also possible that the Pasuk is talking about the future when they come back from the future exile, because you need to have a time when the Plishtim have been fully destroyed, and then when there's nobody there, they're going to have the room to do that. But it's in the future time, we're going to have that strip, and it's going to become a strip of land that will not only be... the point is not only that we'll have control over it, but here the claim is that it'll be so empty of people that we will simply be able to graze and to use that land as open land rather than needing to live in it. Pasuk Chet, and now we get we're going to go on with other nations and part of what they've done wrong and why they're going to deserve this fate. Shamati Karpat Moav v'gidufei b'nei Amon asher cherfut ami v'yagdilu al givulam v'yagdilu al givulam. So part of what's going on here is I hear, Hashem says, I've heard the insults of the people of Moab and of the people of Ammon who mocked the Jewish people, who reviled my people, and they are making fun or gloating over their gevul, over their country, over the fact that they have a gevul. So Rashi reads it as, when the Jews are going to be led into were being led into exile, they would go by the way of Ammon and Moab, which is on the way to the exile that they were being taken to, and they saw the Jews crying and upset and anguished, and they would laugh at them, and they would say, why are you so upset? You're just going back to your ancestral lands. Because after all, Avram Avinu came from back that way anyway. Right? And they got all proud of their own land. In fact, they're staying with their own land. So the result of that, Pasuk Tet, is, L'chein chayaninu mashem tzvakot al k'Yisrael, ki mo'av kizdom yitiye uvne amon ka'amora, mimishak charul umichre melach ushmama ad ulam, Sherit ami yevazum, v'yeter goyi yinchalum. So he says, because of this action that they did, because of their way of handling it, they are going to be like stone in Amora, meaning that they will be destroyed. So mimshak charul, my JPS English has clumps of weeds, and mechrem elach is patches of salt. Rashi agrees on the mechrem melech, that'll be a place that you can get salt out of, but mimshak charul, Rashi says hashmar kol, it's a place that you're going to just be able to, it's going to be so wide open, you can just use your voice and you can call out to great distances without having a problem. I think that's what Rashi means. It's going to be desolate forever, and then Sherita mi yevazum, the rest of my nation will plunder them and will take over that land. So the prediction therefore is that Plishtim and Ammon and Moab, so Plishtim is today somewhere around the Gaza Strip, and then Ammon and Moab is in the lands that inhabited by the countries of Jordan and Syria. The prediction in Sefania is that by virtue of the way they've handled their reaction to our times of trouble, they are going to lose their land, and their land will become a place that you can derive salt from. So we now have salt works near Stone, actually, near the Dead Sea. There are salt works, but that the other side of the Jordan apparently will become also places for salt works for us to use to mine them for those minerals. Zot lahem tachik ha'onam, and this is going to be in Pasuk Yud, this is going to be the recompense, the reward, the return, the result of their pride. Ki cherfu v'yagdilu alam Hashem tzvakot, because they reviled, they mocked, they embarrassed, and they saw themselves as greater than the nation of God. So this is a key point that I like to return to, just because I think we don't even think about it anymore, but that there is an expectation in Navi, and those who don't do it are, and the expectation is, that those who do not recognize the Jewish people's difference and exceptionalism, right? That's the term that should be used. That they don't recognize, they don't accept the Jewish people's exceptionalism. So those nations are in fact going to bear the consequences of that refusal. That's what's being said here. That's what's being announced here. So these nations are good examples of it. Because when the Jews go into exile, they use that as an opportunity to mock. Pasuk Yud Aleph, No Ra Hashem Aleihem Ki Raza. So Hashem is going to finally, at some point in the future, Hashem is going to be terrible and mighty over them, and then they will understand and they will be fear Hashem, and they will know that they can't do anything wrong towards Hashem or towards Hashem's people, and Hashem will then destroy all of the gods, all the idols of these nations, and then as the Radak says, they will all finally understand that there is only one God, it's only Hashem. And then, when he does this by shriveling them up, by making those gods pure nothingness, they will all bow down to Hashem, ish mimekomo, each from their place. So there are other people talking about that come to Yerushalayim to learn about Hashem and to learn from Hashem and to offer in the Beit HaMikdash. But also the truth is that the world, each in its place. There's no prediction here that there won't be a world. There will be a world. It seems like the Plishtim and the Ammon and Moab people will have lost their right to be part of that world in some kind of independent way, and their lands will be taken over by Israel, by the Jews. But the rest of the world, they'll all just have learned their lesson that you have to bow down to Hashem and serve Hashem. Pasuk Yud Bet, Gam Atem Kushim Chalei Charbi Hema. So, also the people of Kush will be Chalei Charbi. They will also suffer this. V'yit Yedo Al Tzafon V'yabed Al Ashur. And this will happen to the people of the north, including Ashur, V'yasem, and Ninveh Lishmama. We've seen this in other Nevi'im, that Ninveh will be destroyed. Tziak Amidbar will be desolate and like a desert. And they'll also be able to use that as a place of shepherding all of the nations around it who are left. You'll also have various animals. My English has jackdaws and owls will roost in the capital. Well, they'll just make it a place to live. And there will be birds also on its threshold, because all of its woodwork, all of its buildings will have been destroyed and will have been made bare for them to be able to do this. So this city that now it's finally talking about all of these cities that they had celebrated themselves and saw themselves as strong and powerful and secure, and says to itself, this is probably about Ninveh itself, and said, Aniv Afsiod, it's me and there's nothing else. And then it's going to be completely desolate, and anybody who comes by it is going to whistle about it and be upset about it, and will move his hands as he says it. He'll just be so upset about seeing this happen, because for all that you may or may not like the city, it's still horrifying to watch it be completely desolate. So the connection of the two parts of the parak are not so clear. The first part of the parak is a final warning. I don't know if it's final, but it's a warning to the good people, and this would then make sense when Chazal said that Zephaniah was a Navi in the Batei Knesiot, because he addresses himself to those who have the wherewithal to already understand the central message, and he's calling out to them and saying, you have to make sure that you observe and keep, that you not only observe and keep what you're doing, but you try hard to get others to do so, and maybe you'll be able to avoid all of the destruction that's going to be happening. I'll just point out that this is one of the psukim. There's one Chagiga Daftalan Mibet which has a series of Amoraim who pointed out psukim in Tanakh that are extremely challenging to imagine that we could live up to them. So Rav Ami, and the way the structure is that such and such Amora, in our case Rav Ami, Kimati Lahai Kro, and they would come up to this pasuk to learn it, Bachi, they would cry. They would cry because of the ramifications. So the our pasuk is Bakshu Tzadik Bakshu Anava Ulai Tisatru Biyomav Hashem. Seek righteousness and modesty and humble and humility, and maybe you'll be saved on the day of Hashem. And he would say, you do all that, and it's only a maybe. And the answer is, the redacted answer, at least to that Gemara, is, yes, it's only a maybe, because there is an element of punishment that comes by virtue of being a member of a society, even if your personal conduct is okay, right? That's always a question. America is a particularly individualistic society. Other societies stray more towards communalism or socialism, and therefore they might be have an easier time understanding this idea. But the psukim seem to assume that just because my personal conduct is unblemished and unbeachable does not mean that I can't be implicated by my society's evils. And if my society is about to be destroyed because of its evils, I may suffer in that as well. Certainly the Radak thinks that galut, exile, for these people is determined, even though we don't have a specific complaint about their personal behavior, nonetheless they will go into exile, and that's by virtue of being part of it. So that's what the crying part of this is, right? The challenge becomes all that much greater. It's not even enough. It's hard enough to be righteous on your own, on a personal level. And now what the pasuk is telling us is that it's not even enough to do that. You might nonetheless be implicated, and you might nonetheless be suffer for the crimes of all of these other people. I'll also point out that when Hashem says, Bakshu Hashem kol anvei aretz, Hashem mishpato pa'alu, who have done his righteousness and his justice, the Gemara in Yevamot takes that as an example of the fact that when Hashem comes to punish somebody, he also always remembers all the things that he did well. So here, in this pasuk, in our parak, it's Hashem looking for the Anvei Aretz, for the Anvei Aretz should look for Hashem, I'm sorry, who did Pa'alo, who did his action, did his righteousness. But the point is that, so the Gemara says, Hashem Mishpato, Hashem Pa'alo, that when Hashem is going to judge people, he also mentioned their good deeds. So an example of that was that the Gemara assumes that Shaul was not mourned properly by the Jewish people, and Hashem eventually came to punish the Jewish people for not mourning him properly, and at the same time, to punish Shaul for having killed the Givonim in a story in Chol. So the Gemara says, why is he doing both at the same time? And the answer is like that. So that's something I remember hearing myself say on other occasions. The idea of balance, of being able to be aware of both sides of a puzzle, is a hard challenge, but that's exactly what the Gemara in Yevamot and Ayin Chet Amud Bet is saying about Hashem. That Hashem does exactly that. At a time when Hashem comes to punish somebody and to mention their problems, Basher Mishpato, when he's judging them, Sham Pa'alo. That's also where he mentions the good deeds that they have done. Another little piece of... So that's the first part of the parak, is a discussion to us. And then he moves easily and smoothly, Tifanya, into a discussion of the destruction that's coming, only he doesn't do it into the Jewish people. That has been done already by him and by others, but to mention that other people around will also have the same kind of a thing go on for them, the same kind of a punishment go on for them. So the idea that Hashem punishes and notices what people have done wrong and reacts to it is not solely true of the Jewish people, it's true of other peoples as well, and that was what much of the parak was about. And the crimes that they did here were not crimes like, which are bad and that, which are certainly bad, which I would have thought would be worse. We're not mentioning Avodah Zarah, their idol worship, or their financial improprieties or anything like that. It's only their reaction to the Jewish people, by and large, not only, but by and large, the reaction to the Jewish people that is causing these downfalls that are being predicted for them. And some of these downfalls are significant, right? Some of these downfalls are that they will be permanently destroyed and they will become just grazing land, open land for open use, not even settlement land for the Jewish people upon their full return. Let me just mention that there is a Mechilta to Rabbi Yishmael and Beshalach. And this was true in Perek Aleph also, there was this phrase as well. But the phrase of Vayet Yadeo al Tzafon that we have here in Pasuk Yud Gimel, right, Hashem stretches out his hand over the north. So the Mechilta on the Pasuk and the Shirat Hayam, when the Jews go through the Yamsuf in Chumash, and we have Az Yashir that we say generally in Davening daily, the Pasuk, one of the Pasukim in the Shira in that song says, Natita Yemincha. You stretched out your hand. Mechilta says it should let you know that when God stretches out his hand, when that phrase is used, Risha'im Kalim min ha'olam, the evildoers are destroyed from the world, and produces our pasuk as an example of that. Vayit yadu al tzafon vayabed v'abed et Ashur. So I think that imagery is worth noting, that the way the Mechilta is understanding it is that the phrase in Tanakh of Natita Yimincha or Yadcha, God stretching out his hand, produces the destruction of evildoers. Now, if you want to be a literalist, this would be wrong to take it this literally. We would say, well, that's showing you that God's hand is destructive. God has such a thing called a hand, and it's destructive, and that's why when it goes out, it destroys evildoers. But that's first of all too anthropomorphic, because we don't believe that God has a body, and therefore God doesn't have a hand. And even more than that, the stretching out of the hand is not the same as the striking of the hand. If the phrase was, when God strikes, evildoers are destroyed from the world, I would understand it. So I suspect that the point that Mechilta is trying to make is that the stretching out of God's hand implies in some way an increase of God's presence in the world, or an increase of God's involvement in the world. And that would be what stretching out one's hands is, right? You're, instead of being, as it were, folded in on himself, right? God is now stretching out his hand into the world. That intrusion of God's presence into the world necessarily brings out the destruction of evildoers, because evildoers are contradictory to the idea of God and God's presence in the world. So I think that's what that Mechilta is trying to say, and that's what you have here in Pasuk Yud Gimel, and therefore then what the end of this parak is talking about is, right, this is the Fnei, it started off with a warning to the tzaddikim, to the righteous, to the Anvei Aretz, to be ready for the Yom HaFashem, for the day of God's anger, and now it's telling you the day of God's anger doesn't only apply to the Jews, but when God's anger, it's not anger in the human sense of anger, it's anger in the sense of appearing in the world, increasing God's presence in a way that will remove all of the distractions and all of the ancillary events that could lead people away from proper service of God. The last piece that I'll mention today is that when Tzefanya is describing Nineveh, right, he says, Kol Yishover Bachalon in Pasuk Yudalet Cherev Basaf Ki Arza Ara. So there is an interesting Mishnah in Sota on Daf Mem Cherev and Aleph that talks about the idea that Mishib Batla Sanhedrin, Batla Hashir Mibet HaMishto. From the time there was no more Sanhedrin, there is some talk today, by the way, of trying to rejuvenate the Sanhedrin, and maybe then, therefore, this halakha would no longer be applicable. But the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, from that time, you shouldn't be drinking in drinking houses, meaning Jews shouldn't be going to bars. There's a whole question of halakha about, is it any bar? Is it only a bar where there are live music? But it seems fairly clear, let me say it this way, it seems fairly clear that there's a great problem with going to a bar, going to a place where they are serving alcoholic beverages and playing live music of a non-Jewish variety. So if one were going to be doing that, it would seem to be a violation of a pasuk in Yeshayahu, which says, Bashir lo yishtu yayin, which this Mishnah in Sota is connecting to the cessation of a functioning Sanhedrin. That's not relevant to Tzefanya. But the Gemara right there says, how do you know that it's when the Sanhedrin stopped being, and they have a puzzle to support that, and then Rava says, Zamra beveita churba beseifa. That if you have people just singing in ways that are inappropriate, as if everything is fine, and not recognizing the churba, not recognizing the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the destruction of Yerushalayim, the loss of a Sanhedrin, the loss of all the laws of Yovel and Shemitah, appurtenances, but that's not the right word, all of the evidence, all of the symptoms of destruction that we have, so often we just say it as the loss of the Beit HaMikdash, but it's more than that. It's the loss of a Beit HaMikdash. It's the lack of a Davidic kingship. It's the lack of a functioning Sanhedrin. It's the lack of a majority of the Jews living in Eretz Israel, and certainly, and probably more so than that, the lack of the tribes living each in their own place, which would bring about all sorts of halachot d'oraita that are not yet back in place. So, in the context of all of that, singing in your house is a sense of security, a sense of comfort, the sense of just, yeah, I'm just happy, I'm just, everything's fine, everything's great. So, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to live a morose life, but the Gemara is saying that if you are just fully happy, so that is too similar, that's uncomfortably similar to what we have here in the description of Nineveh, Zota Ira Ali Zaha Yoshevet Lavetach, this city that sits happily and securely thinking that everything on Rabbi Lavava, Aniv Afsiot, it's me and that's all that there is. So, Eichaytel Shama, Marbetz Lachai, how did it become completely desolate and a place of grazing for animals? And Rava says, Amarava, that is what's going to happen to homes like that. If there are Jewish homes that are just relaxed and comfortable and feeling good about themselves without any. So, again, it's not that you're not allowed to set up a home and feel somewhat comfortable and be happy that you have some sense of comfort that perhaps you have a good living and you don't have to worry about that so often. You have safety from enemies, you don't have to worry about that so often, and America's been very good to the Jews, you don't have to worry about that. None of that has to go away. But what Rav is saying is if that leads into you to being so comfortable that you're able to completely ignore, as if the lack of a Beit HaMikdash doesn't leave a gaping hole in your life, right? This is a challenge that I think about every year in Tisha B'Av, but that's perhaps why I'm so attuned to talking about it. If it's like that, so then you qualify for these things in Nineveh. When you read that Gemara then, you have perhaps another option, another reason as to why this parak is relevant to the first half, because the destruction and downfall of these various nations is going to be also an object lesson to us, whether the Anvei Aretz, the ones who theoretically were doing the good thing all the time, or the rest of us who are just sort of limping along, if we commit these problems and ignore the galut and the exile, ignore it as evidence of Hashem's hand in the world, and come to feel fully comfortable and physically fully secure for ourselves, we can worry that then the punishment that Hashem is talking about will eventually come to us. So this is an object lesson, as so often learned by watching others, and hoping that in watching and learning from them and about them, we will avoid that error, and we will come to understand our responsibilities if we want to join the Anvei Aretz, the people who are the modest and the humble ones, who do righteousness, and try to bring others along with them, and hope that we will turn the tide and not be caught up in the punishments that may come to a certain group of people, but rather will be a force for bringing Hashem into the world and therefore having the return of the times when we have the full presence of Hashem and we can really celebrate and really enjoy the return of a Sanhedrin, the return of Yovel, the return of Beit HaMikdash, the return of a Malchut Beit David b'mehera v'yameinu. Have a great day.